All right, welcome to week 9 of Bird's Eye View. We have our beer and our whiskey here, so we're going to be drinking some of our Misery away as we recap this wonderful week in Orioles baseball.
Which wonderful week is that?
You don't play fantasy?
No, not so much.
Oh,
no.
Okay. Well, you know, the Yankees been doing great.
The last week, you know, if it was a fantasy, it was a nightmare. Let's put it that way. Not a good week of Oriole baseball at all. And, you know, we've been saying, oh, this can't last. And then
I don't know what you're talking about. I got my playoff tickets.
Yeah.
Well, I'm really pissed off now because...
You know, the thing is, though, is that the wild card game is now a one-game play-in, so it's
wild what?
Card. It's playoff ticket.
I got tickets for wild card game number 2. What does that mean?
Yeah, you're in trouble, bud. Everybody kept saying, you know, oh, when's it going to happen? When's it going to happen? And last week we talked and we said, you know, gee, the team is scuffling, but we just can't let, you know, 3 or 4 games turn into, oh, let's say 9 of 12.
Yeah.
And that's where we are. You know, a losing stretch has turned into a losing stretch of epic proportions. And this is either the swoon that we've been expecting or it's just a really ugly part of the season. It definitely has exposed. But, I mean, let's just go back. New week, old problems, right?
Yeah, it's basically the same problems that were happening in previous, you know, instances. You know, let's start with starting pitching. Starting pitching for the Orioles has been great so far this season. And then this past 7 days, it's been absolutely atrocious. The starting pitching so far for the past 7 days has been at 6.28 for the ERA, which I don't know about you, but I don't really see many people winning baseball games when your starting pitching is having an ERA of 6.28.
It's certainly not helpful, but it is in that T-ball range, isn't it?
I'm not even sure if it's in that T-ball range. Maybe the errors are in that T-ball range, but I'm not sure about the starting pitching.
I will say it's kind of ironic because the only bright spot that there's been in the starting rotation recently has been Mattis.
Well, Mattis had that really good game. He had the gem game, and that was pretty much the only positive of the entire week in terms of pitching performance.
Yeah.
I know watching that game, I kept thinking to myself, all right, we're going to blow it. But Mattis was resolute. He made a mention that he was trying a new pitch. I think it was a slider that he hadn't really used a lot in previous games, and he said, it looked like it worked. I think I'll keep pitching it. And I said, no shit, you should still be using it. It seemed to work very well.
I've got a new pitch I call the not suck, and I'm going to throw that as often as possible.
But, okay, let's come back to the topic of Brian Mattis. You know, he threw a great game, but it was him relying on a pitch that he wasn't entirely comfortable with and saying, I trust in my stuff, and I'm going to throw this pitch, and if it fails me, it fails me. If it works, great. Well, and I think we can come right into that and say, the exact opposite of that is Jake Arrieta.
Yeah, boy, he has just been miserable. You know, and a couple weeks ago, it was the bad inning.
Right.
And then it was, well, bad start. And it's just been a series of bad starts where he has not had anything working for him.
Yeah, I mean, the last start that he had, though, I mean, it wasn't that bad of a game. But again, it got to that situation where he got to that one inning and he just totally lost all confidence in all of his pitches. And he was basically no better than Tommy Hunter just throwing batting practice up there.
Oh, you know, and the other thing is that he couldn't get out of the fifth inning, and that's obviously unacceptable from a starter, much less the starter that you threw out there on opening day.
Yeah, but then you look at the inning right before that, and he still had all the stuff together. So what made him go into that next inning and say, yeah, I can't go any further? Well, is it fatigue? It can't be fatigue.
No, we've talked about it. It's got to be in his head, and I don't know how you fix that, especially mid-season. And if it's in his head, if the problem is all mental, is it the type of thing that you're going to fix by getting sent to the minors? I would argue no. You know, because in the last game that he threw out there, I said, well, enjoy the minors, Jake. But
who's there to come up and replace him?
Well, forgetting that for a second, will that actually help him is my next question. And I think the thing that you have to be concerned about is, you know, are you going to be able to actually do good for him by sending him down to the minors? I'm just not sure. But I know he's certainly not helping the club.
Yeah, I just don't. I mean, it's frustrating. he's our opening day pitcher, and he's just flailing right now and is not being able to be a consistent pitcher. But at the same time, you have no one else to bring up right now.
It's true. You know, yeah, the cupboard is awfully bare. Let me say this, and let's not get crazy. We do have bodies down there, and what I mean by that is this. I think Brad Bergeson just threw his fourth quality start in AAA, and I know that he's Brad Bergeson, and I know that it's AAA competition, but if you need an organizational soldier to come up and put a couple starts together while we figure out what to do, I feel like we've got some of those guys down there.
Sure, we should just bring up Chris Tillman and Jason Birkin as well.
Don't get too excited, I said. But in a pinch, while we figure something out or wait for Zach Britton to come back, I'm saying either of those two guys, for whom there's not a whole lot of 2012 tape, may be an improvement over Jake Arrieta or the Tommy Hunters of the world.
Yeah, I mean, it's just the aspect of, we know what Chris Feldman's going to do, we know what Jason Birkin's going to do, we're going to know what Brad Bergeson does. Just because you have a quality start in AAA doesn't mean you're going to come up here and, you know, throw a few quality starts in the major leagues. I mean, it's just not going to happen. There's too much evidence of that the case.
So basically what you're saying is we've just got to keep throwing Jake Arrieta out there.
Yeah.
Well, Buck seems to agree with you.
I mean, how can you not? I mean, there's only one other option.
And which option is that?
I mean, you got to bring in the protester, of course.
Why do you hate me so much?
I don't see how you can't bring it, you know, the protester, and just say, you know, throw three or four innings. Let's see how you do. It's a better option than bringing Jason Birkin or Jake or anybody else. I mean, just bring him up and just see how he does.
All right, are you done?
Yeah, I'm done.
Can we stop talking about pitching and talk about the next thing that's been miserable?
Sure, let's talk about the next miserable thing in Orioles baseball, because there's a lot of them.
Well, that would be hitting. Where did it go? This team used to score runs?
Yeah, but they used to score runs and home runs.
Okay, so where did that go?
Eventually home runs go away. Unless you're Texas.
Yeah.
Or the Yankees.
I mean, as great a season so far as Adam Jones has been having, his ratio of fly ball to home run was just completely off the charts ridiculous. And you're right, that kind of thing can't sustain itself. The other weird thing about...
You can live and die in the home run, and in this case, the Orioles were dying on the home run.
Right. The other weird thing is that not only were they hitting a shit ton of home runs, but they were also hitting solo home runs.
Right.
So, you know, they really weren't doing a whole lot to manufacture runs or to, you know, multiply those home runs by putting guys on base ahead of the boppers. So, it's clear that that kind of thing can't hold up forever, but...
You lost a lot of players, too. You lost Markakis. That hurts you. I mean, I know Markakis hasn't had a great season, but he's had a pretty decent season in terms of offensive performance. And when you take him out and you put in someone like Andy Chavez or this guy named Pierce, which we'll get to, you know, it's just you're not going to have the same, you know, ability that, you know, Nick Markakis has to get on base and also have the ability to hit extra base hits.
The other thing that's been frustrating about watching the last week of Oriole baseball is that I feel like for the first time this season, I'm starting to see guys give away at bats. You know, and one of the things that was so nice during the early, you know, portion of the season was that I felt like no matter how far down we were, the Orioles were putting together productive at bats, they were putting together good innings, and that's what gave them the ability to come back from deficits. That's what gave them the ability to win tight games. And you know, that game that I went to a couple weeks ago where we were playing the Rays and we were down at one point, I think 8-2, and I thought, oh, we're done. We ended up losing that game 8-6, and I'm not saying, you know, oh gee, isn't that great, but what I'm saying is the last week or so I feel like once we were down we were out.
Yeah.
And that has been the really frustrating thing for me, at least in the last couple seasons, to watch, is that you can basically script out the game. As soon as the third inning is done, you're like, oh, well, we're down by three. We're going to lose this game, you know, 5-2. They need to stop giving away at bats, and they need to go back to being patient and productive. And, you know, you can't press 1-9, and I really think that's what's going on here.
I think they're just looking for that home run swing in order to get that 3-run homer and basically get right back in the game. And that's what they've been doing for the whole season. And you really haven't had a, like we talked about last week, they really haven't had a great average with men on base. So if they're going to, you know, keep making those home run swings, it's just not going to work. I agree with you. They need to take more pitches. They need to, you know, try to get those walks. But,
you know, it may also be the exposure of some guys that maybe...
It could just be this team is not that good.
We're playing above their level. I mean, you look at a guy like Robert Andino, who's struggled mightily in the last week. I mean, he just looks overmatched, and maybe it's because he's playing more games than he is, you know, that's really optimal for him. You know, Buck really wants to use that him as that super utility guy to play all over the field, to get at-bats from second, third, short, left field. Maybe him being the everyday second baseman is bad for his game and ultimately bad for the team.
I think he needs to shift his hat the other way just to get it back on coordination.
You
so.
Know, I wouldn't so much mind him with his hat if he would just not cover one ear. It just looks weird, freaks me out a little bit.
Here's the thing. I love goofy, you know, shit. You know, I love the goofiness of, like, Pedro Strop and the way he talks. I mean, that's great. I love players like that. And Dino, you know... Yeah, you can be goofy all you want, but be productive.
Well, it's hard to hate on Robert Andino. I like watching him play. It's just that at the plate, he's been lost. And you know, during this rough stretch of games, it's not just, you know, the fringe players that haven't been producing. You know, Matt Wieters has just been, you know, abysmal during that stretch of games.
Well, he was abysmal 2 weeks ago.
Yeah, lately he's been
this
he's
past
been
week
up.
He's been doing great. I mean. He has had a .353 average, a .421 on base percentage, and a slugging of .529. It's pretty darn good. I mean, he's had some clutch hits this past week. He's starting to come out of that funk. And we always talked about, well, he's got to keep going through here and keep batting because he's eventually going to come out of that funk. It looks like he's finally coming out of that funk.
Yeah.
It would have been nice to have that a few weeks ago, but it is what it is. They're all baseball players go through these funks.
It would be nice if you know, one or two of these guys could also carry the team when the rest of them are in those funks. I mean, I look at a guy like Matt Wieters, Adam Jones, even to a degree, J.J. Hardy.
What about Wilson Bettermeet?
You know, I'm going to hold back on the expectations for Wilson Bettermeet doing anything. So that way, whatever comes out of him is a pleasant surprise. It's the bonus. Wilson Bettermeet gets a hit. You're in the bonus.
But Mark Reynolds actually picks up a ball on the infield. Bonus.
I'm not going to spend a moment thinking about Mark Reynolds and a glove. That whole side of his game does not exist for me right now.
So there's like Vladimir Guerrero for you?
Basically, yeah. Yeah. But no, those three guys, Jones, Wieters, and Hardy, I feel like they should be able to, you know, hold back the losing streaks, you know, hold back hold down the fort as far as the offense is concerned when the rest of the team is slumping, and we just haven't seen it.
Okay, well, this comes back to a conversation we had last week, which was, you know, we don't really have a starting pitcher, I should say, that's really a stopper.
Mm-hmm.
So we basically are expecting one of our starting players as a position player to come in there and be the stopper. So everyone is now the opinion that Adam Jones really has to be that player because he just signed this massive contract. He's really the face and the figurehead of the Orioles. Nick Markakis isn't available anymore. He's not traveling with the team. He's on the disabled list, you know.
From what I hear, though, he's got a great pool in Florida.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, Brian Roberts' wife is down in Florida, too.
Now, did you hear about this? Adam Jones went down to Sarasota to see the specialist for his wrists and his arm.
Yeah.
Both of which had contusions, by the way.
Yes.
Good news. He spent the entire day at Nick Markakis' place doing cannonballs in the pool and eating pizza.
Yeah.
That was his quote about what I did on my summer vacation.
Yeah. Brian Roberts' wife was there, too. You didn't hear that?
I did not hear that.
Oh,
wow. Are we just... You know what? We are going to have, like, the weekly Brian Roberts wife moment for Scott.
Pretty much. That and Jim Palmer segment.
And the protester.
Can you imagine what would happen if
Brian Roberts' wife
and Jim Palmer were to get together?
You need a minute?
All right, I'm good now.
Okay. I have no idea what the hell we were talking about, but it had something to do with hitting.
I think we're talking about a figurehead for the Orioles, for a position player. I honestly think it comes back to what we talked about that at the beginning of the season of, yeah, you got Adam Jones, you have Matt Wieters, but you don't have that really great player.
Mm-hmm.
Adam Jones is definitely right there, but it would really be nice to have another solid player on this team that was signed either through free agency or, you know, it might be in a few years, you know, have to be brought up through the draft, but we really need to have that other player, that you have three players that are just dominant players. Weeders can be one of them. Jones can be another one. Markakis was supposed to be one of them, and so was Brian Roberts, but, yeah, they're not going to be those dominant players.
Yeah.
The Orioles need one more dominant player, and I don't know who it is, but they need a dominant player, like a Josh Hamilton.
Yeah, somebody who can contribute at a high level and somebody who can be dependent upon.
I mean, the one person I think of back in the day was Rafael Palmeiro, was that guy that they signed and they said, mm-hmm. okay, we're going to make you that. Roberto Alomar was another one that they signed and said, okay, you're going to be a figurehead for this team. And they just did just enough and were vocal enough on that team to make a difference and get certain wins that were necessary.
Unfortunately, I mean, you know, you look at this club and I don't know if this club is the type that, you know, could afford to be a seller, or I'm sorry, a buyer, when it comes to the trade deadline, and what are you going to have to give up?
Well,
are they in an organizational standpoint where they can afford to give up anything?
No.
And take one step further, who the hell is going to come here out of the free agency market? I mean, you know, the Orioles were flying high, were looking pretty, they were the darlings of Major League Baseball, and so when a guy like Roy Oswalt said, hey, I want to go to a contender and I'm going to be a one-year rental, a few people started grumbling, oh, maybe the Orioles will be involved, but nobody's coming here level.
Look, here's the thing. If the Nationals are able to go out and say, we're going to overspend to buy Jason Worth, the Orioles could easily go out there and overspend to get a quality player.
Sure.
Are they going to have to pay an exorbitant amount of price? Hell yes. But would it be worth it? Hell yes.
You're talking about a Jason Worth type contract.
Yeah, it would have to be a ridiculous contract. Basically, where everyone would be like, they overpaid right. way too much for that player.
So what you're saying is that you want to sign a nice player to a ridiculous contract.
Yes.
Okay. Look,
it's not going to happen.
I'm not saying, well, let's start there.
It's not going to happen.
That's just not the way the team does business.
Right.
I'm not saying that you're wrong. I just can't get over the fact that it's not going
to
happen.
You're right. It's not going to happen. It's me basically saying we should try it at least once. You know, last time we tried it was with Albert Bell, and that was a disaster, but we need to try it.
So, again,
we're getting off track. We're still in week 9. The season's not over. You know, we're going through a slump. All teams go through a slump. It's a matter now of picking up the ashes and saying we're able to come back and be in the ball game.
So, look, the here and now is bad. The week has been rough. You know, poor pitching, no hitting. The defense has been atrocious. Like I said before, we've turned in a couple game losing streak into a slide of you know, multiple games. I think the next question really is, can the team recover to the point that they can stay close in the division for any period of time? You know, the division 1 through 5 is, I think, only 3 games separated. So, you know, we're a game out of first place. I think it's Boston that's or Toronto that's in last place, 3 games back. You know, can we stay in the mix for a little while? Or, you know, has that ship sailed?
I think it all comes down to starting pitching. I really think that ship has sailed. I think, you know, you look at April and May, the pitchers basically went above and beyond what we were expecting them to do. And I think, you know, like I said before, once certain scouting reports started coming out and, you know, information started coming out about this player and that player, you know, it's eventually people are going to learn how to approach certain plate appearances. So the ERA is going to go up a little bit more. Now, that being said, we started this season, and I said, you know, they'll probably win in the low 60s, no more than 66 games.
Yeah, my number was 62.
My opinion is they can definitely contend for 500 this season. I think that's a realistic goal. Are they a playoff team, and they're going to win 90 games? No. But could they win 81 games? Yes, I think they could.
Okay. Well, you know, and then
I mean, do you disagree with this? I mean,
no, I begrudgingly have to raise my expectations of what the team is capable of over the season, just because of the great start we've had and the fact that we've been able to rack up, you know, so many wins in the early portion of the season. You know, I asked, could we stay close? And I guess we should qualify what that means. I mean, how many games do you think it's going to take to win the AL East?
I think it's going to take 95.
All right.
You think that's reasonable?
I
think it's not going to be that 100 games because that would have to be a really dominant performance in the AL East. So I think it's going to be a closer
I got to be honest, I don't think it's going to be that high. I really see the AL East beating each other up a bunch this year. And you know, take out the fact that the Orioles have had a hot start. You've got the Yanks and the Red Sox and the Rays, who are, of course, going to beat up on one another. But even if the Orioles and the Blue Jays can be somewhat representative of a major league club, you know, even if they can just be okay, then I think those wins aren't going to be as easy as they you know, had once been for those top three. And I think that, you know, 91 games would win the division, with the next team being at 89.
Okay, I can.
And so, having said that, if the team wins 81 games, you're still like in the same conversation in September.
Sure, you know what I mean. You're in the same conversation. It's just that is a big divide. I mean, the Blue Jays have been historically above 500 for several seasons, but have they really been in the conversation?
A big divide. We've been at least 30 games out for how many years in a row?
Right.
And you go to Boston, and you have a runner on first base, and the butt cam from behind the first base coach looks at the runner. Yeah. And in the background, you see the green monster, and you see the names of the teams that are in the division. And the Orioles are always at the bottom, and they're the only one that have double digits behind the leader.
Well, actually, Fenway changed that. They only include the top three now.
No, that's ESPN.
Oh, okay, that's right. That's right. Yeah. Oh, they're so similar, so.
You know, ESPN Boston. That's what they ought to do with that scoreboard out there.
Yeah.
So I wonder, you know, and we'll continue to revisit this as the season goes on. Can they stay close? For how long? And you know, I'd love to think that second wild card berth factors into the discussion, but I think that we can both agree that's a pipe dream at this point. Let me actually use that question as a segue. I want to talk about some of the key injuries that have taken place in the team. And I'm going to start with Zach Britton.
Right.
Britton had a really good rookie campaign.
Yep.
He had a good year last year. And, you know, I'm not saying he's the second coming, but boy, he would have been a handy arm at the beginning of this season. When you look at a lot of the ineffective starts that we've gotten, I would have loved to have Zach Britton. How close, you know, do we think he is? At this point, he's in his rehab assignment. He's pitching at AAA, so you know he's obviously in the neighborhood. But you know, I wonder if it's going to be one more start in AAA, or if, you know, there's a roster move coming.
Well, I mean, let's go back to what I said at the beginning of the season. Beginning of the season, I said there's no way he's going to pitch more than 50 innings. I'm not sure if that's the case anymore. I think he actually comes back and pitches for the rest of the season once he comes back.
Well, that having been said, he needs to be effective.
He does need to be effective, but I think he's going to come back and be effective. He's actually had some really decent performances in his rehab starts. Mm-hmm. I think he's going to come back and be an effective fifth starter. He's going to take that Tommy Hunter position. So the next time the Orioles need a fifth starter, I think he comes up.
I hope so.
I mean, what other options do you have? You basically shortchange, you know, one of our pitchers and say, oh, we're going to put you on a four-day rest. That's only going to hurt players like Chen and Hamill. So I think, you know, when the opportunity arises where we don't have all these days off, I think Britton comes back up and he starts pitching again in the major leagues.
Well, you know, here's hoping. And you know, when the team's doing so poorly, you can't help but put all your hope, you know, all those eggs in that basket. Wow, when Zach Britton gets back, everything's going to be fine.
Well, it's not going to be fine, but it'll be another player that is not going to be like Tommy Hunter.
Right. Well, or so we hope.
Right.
Next in the infirmary ward, Nick Markakis.
Yeah, well, I think he's out till the All-Star break, personally.
Here's the thing. You know, they say it's a 3 to 4 week injury, and I just don't buy that.
Yeah.
I mean, he no matter how minor it is, he's had surgery on his wrist.
Well, that's what the local beat people were saying. Right. MLB.com was reporting that it's a 6 to 8 week injury.
The thing is, though, is that even if it's 6 to 8 week, that's just for the thing to heal up.
Right.
What I want to know is, when is he going to be back in a baseball shape that he can do all the things that he does at such a high level that it's gonna matter that Nick Markakis is back on the club? When is he going to be able to take swings pain-free, confidently? Yep. When is he going to be able to make diving catches? When is he going to be able to slide into bases and do all the things that Nick Markakis needs to do to contribute to the club?
And I still say it's All-Star break. I mean, that gives you 6 weeks, basically, to rehab, and you can come back with the team after the All-Star break and join them again and make sure that everything's okay.
Call me a pessimist, but the way things are going lately, I just have no confidence that he's going to come back from this and be as you know, effective as he was, to have the strength in that wrist that you require to as a baseball player. It's just something we're really going to have to watch. And you know, in the meantime, it's been really frustrating to me to see that we don't really have any depth in the outfield. And we'll get to the roster in a minute, but you really hurt. You realize how much you hurt without Nick Markakis once he's gone. You know, it's been really easy to say, oh, he hasn't been what we thought he was going to be when he signed that $66 million extension. Oh, he hasn't been, you know, doing all the things that he's supposed to, hitting for power, getting on base. But when he's gone, it's a different ballgame.
And it's nice to have that defense ability also out there in right field where you're looking at it now and you're just like, I wonder if that ball can actually be caught by that player.
That cannot be overstated how good he is out there. Also, in the injury front, I mean, let's talk about Exposito. Also has that bone broken in his wrist. Is this the new oblique injury or a torn labrum? I mean, everybody's doing it.
Well, you know, it's really big on Miami right now. It cuts the body weight by like 5%, so all the hot celebrities are doing it right now.
The other thing about this bone is that apparently it's like your appendix. You don't even need it. So rather than, you know, your bone breaks, you put a splint in there to heal, they just take it out.
I mean, okay.
I guess it's just one of those new baseball things. I had never heard
of it. Well, here's the thing. I did read about this on MLB.com, and they did say that there has been previous individuals that had this surgery, and they have shown a decline in power. So their slugging percentage has gone down after the surgery.
I don't really think Exposito has to worry about that, to be honest with you.
I think if Exposito actually is still on this team at the end of this season, kudos to him, but I just don't see that happen.
You know, I'd never heard of this bone before this year. Just like I'd never really thought about what an oblique injury was before 05 or whatever it was when that started happening. It's just nuts. Next on the list, you know, that goes right into, we talked about Adam Jones a little bit ago. You know, when he got nailed in the Toronto series, I thought, oh God, he can't go down. Because, you know, he actually, that injury took him to his knees. And he's a pretty tough guy. And so when that happens, I was like, oh God, that must have really gotten him. He stayed in the game, but, you know, I was really worried about it. But then, you know, when he got lifted in the ninth the other day, you know, with runners on base in a key situation, you knew something.
Yeah, you're like, row.
You know, he had the MRIs taken. He's fine, but he's got, you know, deep bruises on both of his wrists. I wonder if that's going to really affect him for, you know, the rest of the season, or how long it's going to take to recover from that. You know, here we are on a Tuesday night playing the Red Sox, and Jones has an RBI single, so it looks like he's, you know, not hampered too much. But at the same time,
it's a long baseball season.
Certainly is, especially for a guy who plays, you know, damn near every day.
Yep.
Which brings us to my favorite topic, Brian Roberts.
Wife.
Let's try again. My favorite topic.
Oh, okay.
Brian Roberts.
Actually, I'm willing to talk just about Brian Roberts because...
a rare treat.
All right, so Brian Roberts is playing baseball now. He's in Norfolk.
He hit a home run from what I read.
He did hit a home run, but the more important thing I think is he's been taking a lot of walks. For an individual that has a concussion and has had issues with, you know, blurry vision and also the ability to basically watch the game, I think it's a really good sign that someone's able to take that many walks in the minor leagues. I mean, I know it's minor league pitching, but it's a really good sign that he's getting plate recognition.
I got to be honest. I'm going to go back and say that the thing I'm most excited about is the fact that we're still talking about Brian Roberts playing baseball at this point. You know, I don't know how long it's been now for his rehab assignment, but honestly, I expected that he would go down there, he would get hurt again, and that would be the straw that broke the camel's back. So I am delighted to see that Brian Roberts is still playing ball, that he appears to be, you know, by all accounts, doing okay, and, you know, we'll keep holding our breath and hoping.
Yeah, I mean, I think actually it's only a matter of time now before he comes up. I think it's going to be... I think it's another 11 days until he's actually able to come up from the 60-day. I think it's at that point they basically say, we're going to bring you up, we're going to make you a DH. I'm not sure who they send down. Probably Tolleson, I guess, in his place.
Yeah.
I'm sure they'll just work Robertson as a DH for a few games, but then they'll say, you know what, we'll shift Andino to third. Why don't you go out there and take two games this week at second base and just see how you do. If you get through it and you just don't want to do it anymore and you can't handle it, we'll pull you out. We'll put Flaherty in.
Well, you know, I think the thing that...
I think just the writing's on the wall for Tolleson as soon as Roberts comes up.
Sure. Well, I mean, you know, Roberts is proving that he can play both ways right now. At a high enough level that he's at AAA. So that's clear to me. The other thing that is in his favor, I think, is that we don't really have a designated hitter.
Right.
You know, we don't have a guy
who's... Wilson Bedemit?
Wilson Benjamin is
Chris Davis.
Wilson Benjamin does many things, but not a DH.
Ronnie Paulino.
He could be a ball boy, that's for sure, but he's not a DH. I think that, you know, because we don't have that role, a guy like Roberts could come in, play a few games at DH, you know, get his feet back under him, you know, hitting off major league pitching, and yeah, that would be a really good entryway. Look, I hope he comes back. I hope he stays back. I hope that he's, you know, even three quarters of the player that he was. We'll just have to wait and see.
Yeah, I mean, it'd be great. Let's wait and see. We'll hold discussion to see when he actually comes back up. But I really think that he has the possibility to be a very positive sign for this team. I don't think I would have said that a month ago, but I think he has the possibility right now with his team floundering to be a really big boost for this team.
Sure, a nice shot in the arm.
Yeah.
All right, let me ask you a couple of roster questions here.
All right.
Are we really going to see Miguel Tejada on the club?
Absolutely not.
Okay. Why?
Because there's other people in AAA that, you know, are just as good. There's this one individual named Tyler Kelly, who's the third baseman down in Norfolk. You know, he has pretty much similar stats to Miguel Tejada. If you're going to bring up a third baseman, bring up Tyler Kelly.
Well, here's the thing. Let me first say...
Look, I know you want to pull out your Tejada jersey, and I know you wanted to wear it to the ballpark, and I know you want to go crazy. Never again.
I wouldn't even, you know, force my Tejada jersey on a homeless person. That's just not... It's not cool. Let me, for the record, say I'm in no way in favor of Tejada being in this organization. I think that ship has sailed. I don't think he has anything left in the tank. I think it's ridiculous for us to be using up a roster spot with Miguel Tejada. That having been said, they went out, they allowed him to do the tryout, they identified that they had a hole at third base, they have let him get all the way to AAA. I think there's only a matter of time before they bring him up, because they're obviously not committed to a guy like Steve Tolleson. They've buried Ryan Flaherty on the bench. They don't have a real third baseman because neither Mark Reynolds nor Wilson Benamede has actually proved himself to be a good option over there. I think that you're going to bring this guy up, and you know, I can scream from the rooftops about why that's such a bad idea, but I think it's only a matter of time.
Well, there's only one encouraging aspect to bringing Miguel Tejada up.
Do you have a time machine?
Well, it's actually very similar, actually.
Okay.
My thought is, if the Orioles keep continuing to lose, we can bring Miguel Tejada up, and we can start to reassemble the 2005 team.
Okay, I'm listening.
So if we can reassemble the 2005 team, we can flounder and fail just as much as they did in the second half of the season, and we can just basically do a deja vu all over again. We can meet misery 7 years in the future. But all this time with Kevin Gregg.
It was really important for you to finish crapping my heart right there, wasn't it?
Yes, it was.
You know, I think that they are going to bring him up. It's only a matter of time. I don't know how long he'll stay here, because one of the things we've talked about is when Brian Roberts comes up, does that mean Andino goes to third for a significant portion of time? I think it just increases the chance that Tolleson will be sent down, because there won't be room for him.
I think it increases the aspect that Tolleson goes down. I also think if it does happen and he actually displays the ability to play second base, I think it also increases the possibility that Mark Reynolds could be traded at the trade deadline.
Sure.
Because I think there is the opportunity out there for someone to say, you know what, he has a decent enough on-base percentage and a decent enough slugging percentage that if we bring him to our team, maybe he's able to contribute. And you probably won't get much for him. I'm betting you probably only get a relief pitcher for him. But I think that's, well, you know, a trade that would definitely be considered by, you know, Dan Duquette.
Okay, the ideal time to trade him would have been last year.
Oh, there's no doubt about that. But okay. There's no doubt about that. But if you're still looking at that option, the option is still, hey, let's get rid of him now because we can still get some value out of him.
All right, you ready for the next roster question?
Go for it.
All right, who the hell is Steve Pierce?
Who?
Yeah, they bought some guy from the Yankees. It was a cash transaction. I assume that the Yankees couldn't keep him on their 40, so they decided to try to get something.
So what was it, like soda money for the Yankees or something?
Basically. But we made a roster move, and not only did we get this guy, but we put him on our 25-man roster. Who the hell is he?
A body?
I guess. You know, we talked and said, you know, without a real outfielder in the system that made Nick Markakis' departure that much more damning. But
we do have a real outfielder
Yeah, we got plenty of them down there. But, you know, Steve Pierce is gonna fill that role for a little while. And, you know, I just don't know really how long he'll stay on the club.
I mean, yeah, you're right. We've got plenty of outfielders. We've got Ford. We've got Avery as well. I mean,
I think I'm on the record for saying I'm a believer in Avery just from what he did, even though, you know, he got sent back down because he had a rough patch. I think that kid's going to do well in the majors. He won't be a superstar, but he'll do well in the majors as a you know, complimentary player.
He's going to come back up very shortly. It's just a matter of they want to keep him down in AAA in order to get him a little bit more experience at bats.
Well, yeah, I think it's that old, hey,
bide your time.
Rather him play every day in the minors than, you know.
Well, he also has to get hot again. He went cold. He needs to get hot again, and they'll say, okay, you're hot again. We didn't have to waste cold at bats in the major leagues. We took your cold at bats out in the minor leagues. Now we're going to bring you back up while you're hot. And let's stroke you up here. I mean, what about Ford, though? Why wouldn't we give consideration bringing Ford up?
I have no idea why they wouldn't have done that, because Lou Ford has just been destroying AAA pitching. And, you know, one of two things, that says one of two things to me. Either he's that prototypical 4A guy who just mauls in AAA and gets up here and has nothing to show for himself, or he's a guy who's ready for a promotion.
Well, there's that, and the other aspect is, if you had to choose between a 4A player or Pierce, who do you pick?
Why is there a difference between the two?
That's a fair point.
I think, I don't want to judge the guy before I've really seen him, but by next week, let's talk about whether or not Pierce is a 4A player or not, because I think that, you know, that'll probably be the case. All right, now, roster questions aside, we've talked a little bit tonight about, you know, hey, going back to our earlier predictions about the number of wins and which starting pitchers would be effective and which wouldn't. I thought it was a good opportunity for us to revisit, you know, preseason expectations and maybe do a little bit of forecasting as far as what we'll see, maybe looking forward as far as the All-Star break. So, you know, if you had to make one major prediction for the team from here to the All-Star break, what would it be?
We are going to be above 500, and we're going to be at least two games above 500 at the All-Star break.
Okay. I'm going to take it one step further. I'm going to say that the Orioles are still going to be relevant to the first place discussion by the All-Star break.
Okay. I can go with that too. I think the entire American League East is going to be relevant to that. So I'm going to kind of hold off on that. I think the bigger the story is, how close are they to 500 going into the All-Star break?
Sure. And then, you know, we talked about expectations a little bit. At this point, you know, on June the 5th, what do you think the club will end up as far as a win-loss record at the end of the season?
I'm going to go with 78 and 84.
78 and 84. And your original number was what?
I think 66? It was 66.
All right, so that's a pretty significant climb. Yeah. 78. Now, I was bitter. I was hurt.
Yes, you were.
I said things that I didn't mean, except that I did. My number was 62. I'm going to say, and you know, 78, 84 is a good number. I'm actually going to say that the Orioles are in a position where they could win 80.
Okay.
And
teetering on that 500 line, but still failing.
Edge. Yes.
Okay.
Thanks for putting that in perspective. No problem. For me. I appreciate that. You know, last year I really bought in the preseason to thinking that they could be better, and you know, they weren't. This season I went in thinking they can't possibly do very well, and you know, so far so good.
Well, so you need to go back to not thinking they're going to do very well, and they're just going to instantly turn it around.
Well, it's been a rough couple of weeks here, and so they're doing their best to bring me back down. But you know, all things considered, about a third of the way into the season, the Orioles are not poorly positioned to play entertaining ball.
No, folks,
really,
so. Yeah,
that's all we can hope.
We're
for.
Six games still above 500. You're one game out of the American League East. It's not as bad as it seems. It does seem horrible right now based on the way they've been playing, but it's not the end of the world, people.
That's right.
You
know, and it's so funny because everybody that I, you know, I'm the guy that wears, you know,
I think Orioles. Everybody that is an Orioles fan has been getting the same exact conversations that you have been getting.
I'm the guy that wears Orioles gear to work, you know, four days out of five. and everybody comes up to me and is like, well, ha ha ha, those Orioles, ha 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 ha. It's almost like, you know, the people are enjoying the fall. But yeah, they're not that bad yet. And aren't we in a nice position where we can have just a simply dreadful stretch of games that we've had and still be, you know, above 500, still be close to the top of the division, and still have enough hope of playing interesting, entertaining, and dare I say, you know, good baseball?
Yeah, we want interesting and exciting baseball in August and September.
Yeah.
If that can happen, you can see some amazing stuff in the city.
And it would be nice if we were playing good games in September that were more meaningful, because I feel like Bucks Orioles have you know, had a pretty good September, but it's been completely irrelevant because those September games have followed Junes, Julys, and sometimes Augusts that were just totally pointless. So, you know, we'll see.
Yeah, we'll see. I mean, give it time. Again, Orioles fans, it's not as bad as it seems. Step away from the ledge. Football season is still very far away.
I will admit, I was really far hanging off that edge earlier this week.
You sent some desperate emails out.
The best part of the week was when my wife told me, you're not fun to watch baseball with these days. I was like, well, they're not fun to watch these days.
Yeah. I may have feigned sickness on Sunday night just to be by myself. Just FYI.
This game is so bad, I have to go sit by myself.
Well, no, the game ended, but I just basically said, I don't feel very well. I need to go upstairs and sleep.
Well, hopefully the Orioles can provide some entertainment and bring us back further off that ledge in the next week to come.
Yeah, I think things are going to turn around this week. I have a funny feeling. The jinx is in now, but...
Yeah, thanks a lot.
No problem. All right, well, we'll see what transpires this week, and we'll go from there.
All right. Have a good week, everybody.
Yep. Good luck to the Orioles.